Happy Sabbath, everybody. When we were over in Ireland for the before and after the feast, I found out how you confuse an Irishman. You put three shovels against the wall and tell him to take his pick. It works on me, but there's a better way to confuse me. Take away my watch. Without my watch, I cannot function. So I'm not even going to take it off of my wrist here, even though I won't get to look at it while I'm talking. But when I have my watch broken, I have to stop everything and go get another watch. That's why I only buy the $10 ones at Walmart, because I don't hang on to them too long. Well, when we were over there in Ireland, the Irish would say, you know, we don't have any word that just quite expresses the urgency of mañana. Think about that. The Mexicans will say mañana, mañana. The Irish don't have any word that quite expresses such urgency as mañana. But see, the German in me, I have probably about three quarters German in me, that overrides the Irishness in me. And so I'm very conscious about time, as anybody who is around me knows. Well, what does the world do? They mark time by the holidays, by the big annual holidays, such the one we're seeing evidence of, the back of the hall there. And I am not going to mention what it is. That's a policy of mine. I don't talk that way to relatives to communicate time with them. I don't believe in doing that because I look in the New Testament and the Bible. You do not see those words in there. And in fact, they would refer to the holy days of God in the New Testament. And we would say, see, the fact that those are mentioned in the Bible there shows that they were marking time by that and they were keeping those holy days. So I do not want to let those words come out of my mouth so that people would think that I'm supporting those days. So you know which day we're talking about there anyway. And I'm sure that the holiday, a.k.a. pagan words, whatever you want to call them, I'm sure those are not going to even be a part of the new pure language that Zephaniah 3 verse 9 talks about. So we look at it and we go, well, how can people be so foolish that they're, especially Christians, that they're going to observe today's, you know, this holiday coming up? Well, before we get too drummed up about that, I have to look at myself and say, I used to keep it. How could I be so foolish? I thought I was a Christian and I was keeping it. Well, I didn't really do that probably wholesale too long. The last time I remember even doing Christmas... The last time I remember doing those holiday things was when I was 10 years old. So actually, I thought I was a Christian back then, though. I was going to church regularly, and if somebody would ask me if I was a Christian, I said yes. Well, we recently did a Penrose Bible study on the book of Jeremiah. And when I was doing some study on that, I saw where the Semitic word Baal, B-A-A-L, Baal worship, how that word is actually translated master or Lord. And it's also interesting that you would translate the Hebrew word Malek, M-A-L-E-K, as king. Similar, and it's similar to Molech, Malek, Molech. It's related to it. So can you see how the master deceiver that Mr. Suckling was talking about, Satan the devil, he could actually get the people there to worship. And you know, they're worshiping Baal and Molech, and yet they're saying, hey, I'm just worshiping my Lord and King. Just my Lord and King. Does that sound like what goes on today? Sounds pretty much like the same thing. Well, Genesis 1, verse 14, we know that it says that the sun and the moon were appointed to mark times and seasons. And so what do? We mark the time and the seasons by God's holy days and by the Sabbath. We structure our whole life around keeping the Sabbath and around keeping the holy days. And that's the way it should be. I don't know if you've ever run across a book called The Harmony of the Gospels in Modern English. You know, we have Scott Ashley has the new harmony for the New King James that harmonizes the four Gospels. There's also a Robertson's Harmony of the Gospels that we used back when I was in Ambassador College. But there's another one that I like. It's really good. It's called The Harmony of the Gospels in Modern English. And in this book it says, in the Gospel of John, quote, there are only two chapters out of 21, two out of 21, which are not interwoven with and centered around the holy days of God. John's Gospel plainly shows us that the life of Jesus Christ must be put into the context of the Hebrew calendar, centering around the holy days rather than a Roman calendar oriented around pagan holidays. So if you ever get the chance, you know, it was surprising to me, only two chapters out of the 21 in the book of John that don't have something to do with the holy days. That's amazing. And, you know, the book of John is different than the other three Gospels. It was put together in an interesting way. And that's one of the interesting parts about it that makes it different from the Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Well, we know that God has a 7,000-year plan of salvation. And so the holy days are about harvest seasons and about when God is harvesting His sons and daughters on His timetable. It's on His timetable. So we were at the feast and we were, you know, we kept the last great day, we used to call it. Now I think we're more calling it the eighth day, same day. And we studied about how most of the people are going to be called after the 1,000-year period are up. Now, there'll be a lot called during the millennium when Christ is ruling the earth and we're all there participating in the government of God. There'll be a lot of people called, but the really vast majority, billions and billions, are going to be resurrected in the great white throne judgment that follows. Maybe a 100-year period according to Isaiah, but you know, we're not real sure about that. But that's when the most people are going to be called by God who does that. I don't know if you got to hear a sermon that was by Mr. Roy Holiday, which, you know, amazingly was just days before he had his stroke. But he spoke on the last great day at the Florida feast site. And I listened to it partly out of the fact that, hey, I want to go hear what Mr. Holiday's last sermon he gave was. And it was really a good one. He had an interesting idea I have never heard before in the church. He kind of speculated, because it is speculation, that during the millennium, when Jesus Christ is training us to be ready to serve all those people that are going to be resurrected in the great white throne judgment, Mr. Holiday speculated that God might actually give us access to certain people's spirit and man that God would want each of us to personally go work with. He might give us access to their spirit and man so that we would know them inside and out before they're even resurrected. Interesting idea. I mean, nobody can possibly prove that, but it's an interesting thought about how God might do it. Because it's our spirit and man that is a record of us, our DNA, our experiences, our thoughts, our emotions, you know, everything is what God is going to use to resurrect somebody back to life. Interesting thought. So I thought that was interesting that he said that. And so, you know, the basic idea, though, is that God calls each person when it will be the best time for that person to respond. And we know that to be true. And here you are, you know, here I am. Thank God he thinks this is the best time for us. And that's a wonderful blessing to be aiming for that first resurrection. That's a better resurrection, has a double reward. That's wonderful that God has called us. Well, we know that God has many names. He, you know, Elohim is the family name. Emmanuel, God with us. I'm just reading off a few here. God the Father, Jesus Christ, Yahweh or Yahweh, the eternal, ever-living God. There's some other ones that maybe have more of a title flair to them. Yahweh Nisi, our banner. Yahweh Rotha, our healer. I'm not going to try to even figure out whether those are actually a name or a title, but one thing I wanted to talk about today is the name Master Timer is not even in the Bible. And I don't think there's any Yahweh Timex in the Bible. But for me personally, and maybe it's for you too, I don't know, we'll find out. For me, I think of God as the master timer more than I think of God in about any other way. I always have. It just is, all, here I am, you know, back to watch guy, very time conscious. I think of God as being the master timer, and I relate to Him really special that way. As far as what's going on in the world and what's going on in my life and, you know, my family life and church life and every other way. So my purpose today is going to be to just try to inspire you to have some relaxed trust in your master timer. Relaxed trust, if you remember, probably a year or so ago, I gave a sermon about how I believe the words relaxed trust is what faith really comes down to. So inspire us to have faith in our master timer. So we know that God has a plan and He works it right out on schedule. God is always on time. Better than those German trains. He is always on time. And it's interesting over in Romans chapter 1, I'm not going to turn there, but Paul said that we see what the Creator is like by looking at His creation. We know that to be true. There's an interesting little one of those little videos that comes on Facebook that are always so intriguing to look at. And it said that it was on the story of the birth of a baby chicken. It was real interesting because it said, this is a quote, "The timing has to be exactly right or you have a dead chick." And what happens is on the 19th day, not earlier, not later, on the 19th day, the chick will use his little egg tooth thing he has on his nose, I guess it is, that grows there just for that very purpose, to break open and chip away a hole in the shell. It's on the 19th day. Won't happen on the 18th or the 20th. And then on the 21st day, the little chick will break out of the shell. Apparently it takes, you know, from the 19th day to the 21st day for that to happen. And this commentary says, "He breaks out like he's dropped his space suit off." So this is kind of cute. And I thought that was a wonderful example in the creation that shows what a wonderful master timer God is. He's created things that way. Let's turn over to Isaiah 46, verses 9 to 11. I think I gave you this in a previous message I gave a couple weeks ago, but it's such a good scripture, it won't hurt. Isaiah 46, 9 to 11. And I'm just going to start right in there in the middle where it says, "For I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand." God's counsel is going to stand. One way I heard that expressed is that the big headlines are already made in heaven. You know, and it gives us a lot of comfort when we see the big headlines that are coming at us today and are going to get worse. But they are already made in heaven. God has it all under control. Oh, this one guy named Niels Bohr, he said, "Predicting is very difficult, especially if it's about the future." I thought that was pretty good. In verse 11 there, at the very last line of it, it says, well, let's see. "I will also bring it to pass. I have purposed it. I will also do it. I will also do it." And that ties in really interesting with Revelation 22:6, where Jesus said, "It is done." So, you know, over here in Isaiah, he says, "I will also do it." And then you go to the end of the book and he said, "It is done." And God already has that figured out. And that should give us relaxed trust. Should give us faith. Because, you know, we've heard it said that God is our beginner and ending. Or He's the author and finisher, however way that it's expressed. But you know what? Our master timer takes care of the middle pretty good too. He's just got it all under control. Let's turn over to Psalm 33, verses 10 to 15. I'm going to give you quite a few scriptures today, but not an overwhelming amount, that just show what a wonderful master timer God is and how we can count on that. Psalm 33, verses 10 to 15. The counsel of the Lord stands forever, the plans of His heart to all generations. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And that kind of ties in with America always saying, bless this nation and everything. We have been, but we just haven't really appreciated it. And the people whom He has chosen as His inheritance, that's us, you're part of that. The Lord looks down from heaven, verse 13, He sees all the sons of men. God sees us all, and apparently He's talking about everybody there, of all races, all people, all around the earth. He sees all of them. From the place of His habitation, He looks on all, on all the inhabitants of the earth. He fashions their hearts individually. He considers all their works. We're supposed to be doing an inventory of our life. God considers all their work. He's doing an inventory. It's interesting there in verse 15 where it says He fashions their hearts individually. So God is the master timer, as I read here, for big things, worldwide headlines. He's got that all under control. But He also, verse 15, He fashions people's hearts individually. He's working with us individually too. Just going to refer to some things here without turning to them. In Exodus 12, 40 to 41, it talked about how that first night to be much observed back in Exodus when they were going out of Egypt, that was exactly 430 years to the same day. And the day it seems to be indicating is Genesis 17, where God made the covenant with Abraham. It's a little bit vague on it, but from everything I've studied in our literature, I think it was exactly 430 years to the day when God made the covenant with Abraham in Genesis 17. And, you know, it just shows how God's incredible timing is over centuries. He works out things to be like that. Was Abraham keeping the, night to be much observed? I wouldn't put it past him because he was keeping all of God's commandments, statutes, and judgments and laws. Later on, we see in Isaiah 44, I think it is, where it says that God predicted what Cyrus, the king of Persia, who wasn't even a righteous king of Persia, he was not a righteous man. God predicted what this man was going to do 150 years almost before he was born. Before he was born. And God worked it out. And he's, not only that this particular man is born, but they called him Cyrus. They knew to call him Cyrus. Of course, we have examples in the Bible like Daniel's 70 weeks prophecy, actually telling in advance when Christ was going to be born and come and do what he did. We have the way the Red Sea parting and the walls of Jericho falling down end up happening on the seventh day of unleavened bread. Our great master timer, God, works that out. The 9th of Av is an interesting date. I don't know if you've heard much about that. But here's an interesting list of all the events that happen on the 9th of Av. Then they're usually disastrous events. Because that's why they notice it. Somebody has decided, I don't know how they know it, but it says 10 of the 12 spies returned with a bad report on the 9th of Av. I'm not real sure how they know that, but they said that anyway. Solomon's temple was destroyed by the Babylonians on the 9th of Av. That one's well known. The second temple was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD on the 9th of Av. So you had two of the temples were destroyed on the 9th of Av. That's what I had always heard about it. But you have these other things as well. In 71 AD, the Roman army plowed the city of Jerusalem with salt on the 9th of Av. In 1290, England expelled all Jews from the country on the 12th of Av. In 1492, Spain expelled all Jews from their country on the 9th of Av. Man, these people must be looking around going, what's the 9th of Av so we can do all this nasty stuff? I don't know. I mean, I don't think they have to even sit around and think about it. Satan just puts it in their mind to do it on that day, I guess. In 1914, on the 9th of Av, World War I was declared. A lot of things that are really bad, pure coincidence. I doubt it. Here's one, though, that I'm going to attribute to maybe pure coincidence. In 2014, just 1 year ago on the 9th of Av, that happened to coincide with President Obama's birthday. So Some people would want to make a lot out. I wouldn't make that much out of that. What if it was my birthday? You know, that would be nothing bad about that. Okay, so you're probably thinking like I did, what in the world is the 20th? When is the 9th of Av? We got to avoid this day. No sweat, it already happened on July 26th. So the 9th of Av, it looks like, basically happened somewhere around the end of July. It was on July 26th this past year. Well, in Acts 17, verse 26, again, I'm not turning there, but you'll be familiar with this. It says that God pre-appointed the times for the rise and fall of nations and where they actually live. It says he set their boundaries, the boundaries for that. So here again is something God does phenomenally as a master timer on a national scale. He determines, you know, these four great world ruling empires when they were going to follow. You know, he predicted them in the dream to Nebuchadnezzar, and he brought it about. But he even takes care of smaller nations and all that according to his plan. We're just about, you know, we're in the midst of the election din and all the words that go on as they're heading up toward the presidential election. But Daniel 2:21 says that God is the one who sets up and removes rulers. So, you know, the question you can ask yourself is, does he need your vote to bring in the guy that he is determining is going to be the one that wins? You know, well, somebody could say, yeah, he needs my vote so that there will be enough votes to cause to put in the person that he wants to be there. Well, maybe, but I think that God can somehow make it happen regardless of what you do. But that's up to you to figure that out. There's a couple of really great stories in the Bible that are all about master timing. One of them is the book of Esther. And I'm sure you're familiar with that. I'm not going to try to, you know, do the whole book of Esther in the short message, but chapter 4:15, you can turn there if you want, but you probably don't even need to. Basically, it just says when she was, finding out what was going to happen to her people, what was about to happen, and Mordecai said, "Who knows if you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And she had to go, well, yeah, he convinced her that maybe that's why she was there as the queen, so that she could stop, protect her people. I always ask myself, okay, she told the king, she fearlessly walked up to the king who had not been asking for her. I mean, we just think, she's the queen. She's a gorgeous queen. Why would she even have any fear about going up to the king? I always used to think that. But when you read the story, he had not been asking for her. You know, it wasn't like she thought he was going to be happy to see her because he hadn't been asking for her. So she was worried. And I thought, okay, she stoked up the courage. She went to see him. He welcomed her. And he says, "What do you want, Queen Esther? You know, it's going to happen up to half my kingdom." Well, if it would have been me, I would have said, "Hey, I want this Haman guy to be taken care of and save my people." I was like, "Why?" All she did was say, "Well, I want to throw another banquet on another day for you and for Haman." And I thought, wow, I would have never thought of that. I would have just said, "Please save my people and get rid of this bad guy, Haman." Because he already said he was going to do up to half the kingdom, whatever she said. So I would have just told him what I wanted. But she was, "No, I want to have another banquet for you." Well, because she said that, more good things that God wanted to happen, happened. They ended up building these, it wasn't a good thing in some ways, but they ended up building the gallows so that it could later be used to take care of Haman for what he did. And chapter 6, verse 1 is the part where God being the master timer just really comes into play, because that night the king could not sleep. And because he could not sleep, he ended up, seeing what Mordecai had done that he had never been rewarded for. Let me just read what's in one of the commentaries. I forget, it's in one of the Bibles we have at home. I don't remember which one it's in. But it says, quote, "Literally, the king's sleep fled away. Here is a remarkable instance of the veiled providential control of God over circumstances of human history. upon the king's insomnia, humanly speaking, hinged the survival of the chosen nation, the fulfillment of prophecy, the coming of the Redeemer, and therefore the whole work of redemption. Yet the outcome was never in doubt. For God was in control, making the most trivial of events work together for Haman's defeat and Israel's preservation. And Herodotus said that it was a point of honor for a Persian king to reward somebody promptly who deserved it. So when the king, Ahasuerus, saw that he had goofed up and hadn't rewarded Mordecai for what he did, he was mortified. You know, that was something a king just didn't do. And then right at that moment, the door opens and here comes Haman in the door and says, you know, what should be done? The king says, what should be done for this man that has not been rewarded? Haman thinks it's him. And, you know, it's just the way the whole thing just put together so that it all worked together so flawlessly like that. And I mean, in some ways, that's preposterous. You know, you can't. But I've had things like that happen in my life. Probably you have too, because God has worked with us. What about Joseph? Joseph, you know, is the other. If I were going to pick out two stories that show about God being master timer, the second one I'd pick out would be Joseph. And as Mr. Suckling even said a while back, here was Joseph in the morning. He was he was in prison, and in the afternoon he was second in command of Egypt. You know, I mean, that's amazing what God pulled off in his favor. I remember that part in the story where Joseph had told the two dreams of the butler and the baker. And when the chief butler was the one who got the good interpretation, he was going to be promoted. And so it happened for him and he was so happy. And Joseph said, hey, remember me. When you go back around the king and all that, remember what I did for you. And the butler did not remember anything. And it was 2 years later, it says in the Bible, Joseph was still in prison. Two more years. He thought, man, I told this guy's dream. He's so happy with me. He'll go right to the ones in authority and tell them to get me out of prison. He ended up being stuck for two more years because the butler didn't do what he was supposed to. Sound like an old story? Well, I want to give you a right-up-to-the-minute true story of a brother in Christ. And he told me that he didn't mind if I tell his name or anything. So I said, okay, I'll do tell you at least a little bit. His name is Robert Kern, and if you are connected with the prayer lists that come out of Cincinnati, you'll see his name there a little bit because he does need healing. He's got melanoma. Actually, he's just had very, very good news that the melanoma he had is confined to his left arm. It did not spread to his whole body like they thought. And the recent thing I had heard was that they were only giving him 6 months to 24 months to live, and that was 7 months ago. But the latest news is that it's been confined to his arm, and so maybe it's not going to be quite as bad as that. I haven't heard the outcome yet. But what I wanted to share with, there was a warden there that had exactly the same cancer as Robert did, and he was on the same experimental drugs that Robert was on. And so he was, they had this in common, and he was talking to Robert quite often, and he was saying, you know, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you get a compassionate computation, they call it, where you will be let out of prison because you're about to die, which he's in that condition, possibly still. He's trying to get that compassionate computation. The warden told him that he was going to help him do it. That was quite a few months ago. He had told him then June, July, he was going to do something, never did do it. Anyway, long story short, here's a quote from Robert that he just gave me. He said, the warden has yet 8 months to keep one promise that he has made to me. This was somebody that Robert thought was on his side, that was suffering from the same thing he had, doing the same drugs he had, told him that he was going to help him. And Robert even asked nationwide for people to write letters on his behalf, and I think he's had something like 28 letters written on his behalf unfortunately, to the warden. Everything goes through the warden. The warden is supposed to relay it to the governor of Iowa to give him this computation pardon. And that warden is doing zip. He's doing absolutely nothing. And Robert said this plaintive statement that just is really heartbreaking. He said, "It would appear that God has nothing more for me to do than to die in here." And you would think that, well, that, you know, that kind of made my heart thud. But even in the same letter that he said that, he wrote very positive about, "I know that God's in control. I know He's the master timer." He referred to Joseph. He's a very converted person. He's only been baptized a little over 2 years. But he's writing very converted letters, and he's, you know, I'm sure he's wrestling with, you know, thoughts in private that he doesn't maybe put down in a public letter. But anyway, it's an example of somebody we could pray for, because it's a modern day Joseph. He could die anytime. He's still got 70 melanomas on his arm and a bunch of other problems besides that. I tried to encourage him that God has a reason for him to be there. You know, just like I told him, read the examples in the Bible about Paul and Silas being in prison. And Paul always, he never once talked about, "I got to get out of here. I need to do this because I need to get out of here." He was always wondering what God wanted him to accomplish while he was there in the prison. And then there's that one case in Acts chapter 16 where there was an earthquake and lights and everything else, and all their chains fell off, and the poor prison official thought that they've all escaped, and he was just about to take some knife or something and kill himself, because that's what the Romans would have done to him if they had escaped. And Paul stopped them and said, "Hey, we haven't left, we're still here." They did not try to escape, even though there was this miracle and earthquake and all their chains fell off. But Paul knew that he was actually supposed to be there doing something, and he ended up meeting with this official, and that official ended up being baptized, him and all of his household. So that's why I tried to encourage Robert with that, you know, if God is not letting you out right now like you hope, it's because He has something for you to accomplish there. Well, what about our personal relationship with the Master Timer? I've been talking about national things, bigger group things. We know that, Psalm 103:3 is a real interesting word. Why don't we turn over there, Psalm 103:3. We know that in our personal lives, if you're like me, you're hearing every day about people who have horrendous health problems. We know Joy Shipman. We know others, you know, that have real health problems, and we're praying for them. And, you know, we know that sometimes God heals somebody right away, and sometimes, you know, they take a long time, and it's always in His hands, and we know to leave it that way. Psalm 103:3 says, "Bless the Lord," in verse 1 and down in verse 3, "who forgives all your iniquities, who heals all your diseases." And so, you know, we have this interesting aspect of master timing. You go, well, I know that God heals my forgives my sins, and I know that, you know, I trust that He's doing that right now and every time I ask. And so then somebody will say, "Well, then why isn't He healing me like He said?" Well, it's because He is doing that in a master timing way. I think it was in our prayer we heard that from Mr. Ewart that sometimes when something is not done, it can end up affecting some other people that need to be affected a certain way. And we see examples of that where somebody isn't healed, but there's circumstances that actually become motivational and inspirational in helping some other people grow more toward God. There's just so many reasons, because each one of us need patience. We need character. I know I had a situation where, well, example with this hip thing I'm doing, if God would have just healed me of that right away, I wouldn't have had any opportunity to develop any kind of empathy for other people, because up until that point in my life, I never did have any real pain or suffering. So I was like 60 years old before I really had any pain or suffering. And I think I told you before, I used to work for my boss, a chiropractor, and in his reports he would ask people to describe their experiences with activities of daily living. And they'd say, well, I have a 6 out of 10, you know, for doing dishes or doing something. And I remember, you know, I wouldn't have wanted to do it, but my natural reaction was, oh, you bunch of whiners, crybabies. I mean, I got partly because I was typing these long 30-page reports that I would get weary. But that was my reaction because I think, you whiners, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, can't wash dishes? What's wrong, you know? But, you know, now there's things that I can't do or can't do as easily as I would like. And I have a lot of empathy for people now that my wife will tell you the hardest part of my day is putting my left sock on. I have a really hard time putting a left sock on my foot. And so, you know, when you have something like that happen, you can start to empathize with people like you couldn't before. And then we consider how our life impacts other people, too. There's lots of reasons that God might decide that it's not best right now to just heal you totally. And what do? We know Romans 8:28, all things work for good for those who love God and are the called according to His purpose. And that's us, the called. And as Mr. Boer said, we love God and we want to do His way. So, you know, we put it in His hands. We put it in His hands. Well, what did David say? Psalm 31:5. That's a short one. I'll just quote it to you. My times are in your hand. My times are in your hand. And there's so many wonderful scriptures in the Bible that show that we should just, you know, trust, relaxed trust, faith in our master timer. Let's look at Psalm 139. I'm just going to go through a string of these fairly quickly here. Yeah, still a lot of time here. Psalm 139, verse 16. Is interesting where David said, and in your book, the book of life, which all of your names are written there, they all were written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there were none of them. So if you believe what David said, he said God already knew how many days he was going to live before there were, and before he was even born. So I don't know. I know people argue, you know, they debate about whether, to what extent God knows things like that. But I read what it says there. And at least for David, he said God already knew how many days were fashioned for him before he was even born. And there's some others that tie right in with that. Job 14:5. Job 14:5 says, verse 1, it's talking about man, and then down in verse 5 it says, since his days are determined, the number of his months is with you. You have appointed his limits so that he cannot pass. Sounds exactly like David, that God knows it says the number of his months, which Mary and I, ever since we were married, we've been keeping track of how many months we're married. It was easy when we started. 1 times 1 is 12. 2 times 12 is 24. But we just finished our 26th, and you go, 26 times 12 is 312. So now we've been married 312 months. Here God says, the number of His months is with you. So I think God knows how many months we're alive. You know, from that scripture there. Daniel 5:23 is another one. I'm just going to read what it says. It said, God who holds your breath in His hand and owns all your ways. And I believe that was we was talking to Belshazzar there. So this, pagan king, if you want to call him that, God who holds His breath in His hand and owns all His ways. So God has an incredible, He knows when the sparrow falls. When one sparrow somewhere around the earth falls, He knows it. So He is a master timer for us personally. Just this last week, I had I don't know why, it didn't scare me like it should have. But I was driving down Harrison Street, which is near where we live, and was right at sunset where the sun is coming right into your eyes, kind of wiggling through the trees, but it's still in my eyes. So I was going really slow. Because I really could not see that well, but it's a fairly broad avenue. It doesn't have any stop signs on it as you're going between 15th Street and 9th Street where we turn off. So I was just going slow, doing the best I could. I wasn't going to just park and say, well, I can't see very good, so I'm just going to park. No, I wanted to get home. So I just drove really slowly, and I was looking for the stop sign on 9th Street to turn. Well, pretty soon, here comes the stop sign. Only I was shocked out of my wits. It was on 7th Street, not 9th Street. So that means I drove somehow right through 9th Street, which is a busy street. And, you know, most of the time when you pull up to 9th Street, you're going to stop and wait for a car or two to go by. I still haven't figured this out. I almost feel like I was transported, because I would debate anybody that I was actually in that car going through 9th Street. I don't think it happens, but I could not deny that I was turning on 7th Street. So I told Mary, she didn't get too scared, but I don't know. I just was baffled by it. I couldn't figure it out. But God takes care of us. That's my point. He's the master timer who takes care of us. Psalm 37, verses 1 to 7 is probably worn out in my Bible worse than any other page, because I read this one probably more than about any other section of the Bible, because it's so encouraging. And I don't think I'll read 1 through 7. That's too much to read. But you can read it. It's talking about committing your way to the Lord, and He will guide your steps. He will guide your steps. And verse 23 is interesting, because it says, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. And I always think, ordered. Not just He's going to guide them, but He's actually going to order them, help put them in order, because that's what it's all about. Like with Joseph and with Esther, things happened in an order, or they wouldn't have happened right. So that's an interesting word. So I looked it up to see if there was anything special about it. And it's the word, it's K-U-N, pronounced coon. And it says, causatively to set up, direct, prepare. So it sounds like, you know, causing something to be set up. So, they translate it ordered. They don't just say the steps of a good man are directed or are led by or something like that. So that's an interesting thing, that it's actually put in order. And I've seen that happen in my life at key points in my life where something was put in order. I don't know, I mentioned about how Mary and I have been married 26 years, but we actually went to Ambassador College together. I came in the same, I was 1 year after you. I came in 1 year after her, but I was going to be a sophomore. So we would have been together at Ambassador College for the last 3 years. But as soon as I got there, I was counseled by the administration that they thought it would be a better idea for me to become a freshman and go 4 years. So I did. And, you know, most guys don't date up much. We usually same level or down partly. We don't usually date. So I'm just saying, as the way things ended up, Mary and I hardly saw each other her last 3 years of college, or my 4 years of college. We hardly saw each other. And so, you know, that's the way it was. And then 15 years later, we end up getting married, you know. And that wasn't just a chance meeting. I knew that the minute it happened. And the reason is, it was my third tithe year. And it was my last Sabbath of my third tithe year. And I remember praying very specifically that day. I said, God, you know what my request is for my third tithe year. I don't have anything else I want in life except the right mate. And I requested that. But, you know, I was kind of like, it's getting late. I really wasn't full of faith at that point. I wasn't. But I did know what was going on. And so then one of my roommates, I had three roommates, one of them came up to me and said, my car's not working. I don't have a way to get out to Glendora for services today. Would you take me? So I said, okay. And I drove him out there. I hardly ever went out to outlying churches, but I said, okay, I'll take you out there. And then I met Mary at the door. And, you know, it was a done deal. You know, we both knew it was a done deal pretty much by our second date. So I'm just saying, that was a remarkable time in my life when the circumstances were like a Joseph or like the book of Esther. There's been others, but I'm not going to bore you with other stories. But my boss, who I was working for at Ambassador College, he was the library director, Dr. Richard Walther. And he said something, one of the many things that he said was really worth remembering. He said, no experience is wasted if you get what you should out of it. So look at Joseph. He's going to prison. He's in situations. He's thrown in the pit for a while. You know, he's in all these things. But nothing was a wasted experience with him because he got out of it what he should. You go and read through about Joseph there. I just did it a day ago. And so many verses say God was with him. God gave him favor with the prison guard. He gave him favor with Potiphar. It wasn't Joseph, but Joseph did his part. He kept a good attitude. He kept doing his part, like Mr. Boer was saying in the sermonette. And God blessed him. And he blessed him with things happening at the right time in his life. So that's what we need to do as well. There's some other good scriptures. Proverbs 3, I think, let's turn over there. Proverbs 3, 5 to 6. That's got to be one of the very best ones in the whole Bible to encourage us personally. Proverbs 3, 5 to 6. Trust, there's that faith word again in the Old Testament. Faith was all about trust. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. And I always find, you know, it's like today, is there anything that God needs to do dramatically for me today? Probably not. I have a good life, and, you know, being here on the Sabbath is a good life. And so maybe He doesn't have to, you know, drop what He's doing and managing the whole universe to say, what do I need to do special for Robert today? And I got him a wife back on this, you know, Sabbath of his third tithe year. You know, I did a lot of good things, some other good things that, you know, were amazing things. And so I'm thinking, he probably doesn't need to do anything for me today. But he probably does. I mean, he could have something in mind today that would be really cool that I don't even know about, because I'm still looking for some things to do where I have a little bit of time during the day. Mary gets on me because I'll get bored and have nothing to do, so I'll stop and watch an NCIS episode. And she wants me to do something better with my life than watch NCIS. And I agree with that. But, you know, I'll just say, look, I've been studying. I've been writing. My brain needs a break. But I was thinking the other day, no, I need to just give that up and go do something really productive during that time, because there are good things to do. And what does it say in the Bible? Redeem the time, because they're, you know, not real good times. We need to redeem it. So I was thinking the other day, without my wife even saying it, Robert, you really ought to quit watching NCIS and you ought to go do something more constructive with your time. So we'll see if I carry out the inventory that I did of myself, what I should do. Proverbs 16:9. A man's heart plans his way. Yeah, we should. We should be inventorying. We should be examining. We should be planning our way. But the Lord directs his steps. And I believe that. Remember when Mr. Ashley gave his sermon about us being slaves of God? And he said, you should start every day by saying, God, what can I, as your slave, do for you today? What would you like me to do today? So I'm still asking God that, because I was about to try to say a while ago, I still feel like I have maybe an hour or two a day at least where I'd like to still be doing some more, doing something more constructive and more useful. So I've been asking God, what does He want me to do? Would He like, you know, what would He like to come up with for me to do? And I'm kind of exploring all options. And so maybe today, maybe tomorrow, God will suddenly show me something to do. But if not, well, I can still find things to do, and I'm doing okay in that front. There's a lot of good things to do. There's that one song that we sing. I was kind of curious to see if it might end up popping up just naturally today. But we do that song, As For Me and My House. You know that song. And the word in it, the little phrase in it that I like better than anything, because I am a timer person, it says, never early, never late. Never early, never late. I think it's verse 3 of that song. Have you ever accused God of being early? Not me. I've never, ever accused God of being early. I've accused Him of, no, not accused, that's a bad word, but I thought He was late a few times, but never early. And so the real problem probably is, what do we do with that late part where we think God is late? And Lazarus, that's a wonderful story about thinking God is late. I'm not going to bother turning there, but it's in John chapter 11 and John chapter 12. So it takes up two chapters of the Bible. You know it's got to be a great story. And remember, I think it was Martha that was the one who told him that your dear friend and brother in Christ, Lazarus, is really sick. You need to come. And Jesus just said, oh, he's not sick unto death. He's just sick. And Martha might, you know, probably would have come back later and say, well, you need to take a look at him because I think he's sick unto death now. Because it says that Jesus basically, it looks like he was basically waiting on purpose for Lazarus to die so he could come and do what he wanted to do as a lesson to everybody. And it says in there that Jesus waited until Lazarus was 4 days dead so that he could come and resurrect him and show everybody that powerful example of healing and you know, God being the master timer and everything's okay. There was an interesting quote that I saw where it says, stress makes you believe everything has to happen right now. Stress makes you believe everything has to happen right now. Faith reassures you that everything will happen in God's timing. So I wrote that into my Bible next to one of these good timing scriptures that I've been giving you. There was something else I saw on Facebook where it showed some sheep just walking along, and they were going through, you know, an old dried up riverbed where it was just, you know, it says, when your way seems dry and dusty, remember who's leading you. Remember that the Good Shepherd is leading you, and he's going to take you to those wonderful, cool waters that Psalm 23 talks about when the time is right. But the really interesting thing is you have to see the cool green waters when you're actually walking through the muddy, dirty, you know, dried up riverbed if you're really walking by faith. Recently we had that the wonderful America, the Time Is Now series there, three public appearance campaigns there in Texas. And this was one of the quotes off of that campaign. It said, in our campaign, we begin with the words of the prophet Habakkuk, whose ancient words ring down to us today. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. That's in Habakkuk 1:5. Indeed, God is aware of what's happening on this planet. That should give us some comfort as we see all the crazy things that are going on now. He has a timetable for mankind's survival. He knows how our problems will be solved and how everything will be worked out. And I believe that. I believe that God knows all of that. So we know that we need to redeem the time according to Ephesians 5:16. Psalm 37 says, do good, dwell in the land. We know Matthew 28, Matthew 24 tell us to preach the gospel and prepare a people. And Luke says, keep your hand on the plow. Hebrews says, not neglecting so great a salvation. Somewhere else in the gospels it says, be found so doing and do it with all your heart and with urgency. And we can do all that because we know that God is the master timer and he's going to take care of it all. And he's going to give us a way to do our part. So we have what God is doing as the master timer, and then we have the part that we're supposed to play in it as the person who's participating. The best thing I ever heard was where Mr. Herbert Armstrong called the partnership principle. And I don't think you could do wrong to memorize this because it's such a profound way of saying how we work together with God. He says, pray as if God has to do it all, and do as if you have to do it all. And I don't think there's ever been a better way that was put together than to say it that way. So like Mr. Ashley said, we should all be asking God, I'm happy to be your slave, even though God says, hey, you're really not just my slave, you're my son and daughter. I'm making you into my son and daughter. But if we're happy to be a slave and we say, what do you want me to do today, God? What can I do today? Well, what if Joseph would not have worked so hard when he was, you know, the Potiphar's household? What if he wouldn't have worked so hard when he was thrown in prison? What if he wouldn't have been smart at what God, where God had him and you know, done his part? What if Esther hadn't listened to Hegai, who was his name, H-E-G-A-I, who was the head of the harem apparently, and confided to Esther exactly what she should do if she wanted the king to like her more than any of the other women? And Esther was humble enough to listen to what that guy had to say. What if Esther had proclaimed a three-day fast and then, what's a good word for it, and then just didn't have the character to carry it out? Because I don't know if you've done that, but I've done many a time where I said, I'm going to fast today, one day, and I ended up where things just didn't feel right as I was partly way into it, and I bailed out, you know. Have you ever done that? What if Esther would have proclaimed a three-day fast and then not fulfilled it? 3 days. I haven't ever done one. I've done 2 days, but never three. So I have no idea how hard that is, except I have a two-day idea about how hard a three-day one might be. And she carried it out. Well, the master timer will do his part. We count on it, and we can count on it. And I've tried to show you that if you have relaxed trust or faith in the master timer, that you will never be confused.